Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. This episode is a question and answer session with Wayne Herring of Herring's Greengrass Farm. He addresses several listener questions about small-scale farming, including running pigs and goats in a woodlot, the damage that can be caused by predators and how to protect poultry flocks, and multi-use movable shelters. This is definitely a show worth listening to if you're considering adding livestock to a homestead. If you enjoy this Q&A and would like to hear more on the show, please help me make that happen. Go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. There you can make a donation and find out how to connect to the show. Now then, on to Wayne Herring. I'll join you afterwards with some updates. And I'm back again with Wayne Herring of Herring's Greengrass Farm. The last time he was with me, we talked about what it was like to be transitioning to the life of a small-scale farmer. In this short piece, we're going to be answering a couple of listener questions that came in. So, Wayne, thank you for joining me today.
Sure, good to be with you.
And the first of these questions that we have, and this is all about really small-scale agriculture, many of the things that you're already raising here. And the first one is, in your opinion, what type and density of livestock would be most appropriate to raise on low-lying, heavily wooded land that floods every 2 to 3 years?
Well, I guess two things that come to mind that we have raised here would be goats and pigs in a brushy area, because goats, of course, are not super selective and they will browse and eat things like that. And then the other thing that comes to mind is pigs. And pigs, not because I grow them on low-lying, wooded ground prone to flooding here, but primarily because, as I think about it, I've done some hog hunting in South Carolina where hogs are a nuisance and a problem, and there's a large state-owned wildlife property that we go to, and it's nothing but land prone to flooding. And I can tell you that there's a whole lot of hogs there, and they seem to naturally do very well there. Pigs certainly would be first, and then probably goats secondarily. But pigs don't mind getting their feet wet, for sure.
Now, if this land is like scrubby and brush covered, would you run the goats first to clear it for the pigs, or would you go in and manually make space?
I wouldn't guess that you'd want to make space for anything and cut things down, except as you need to have roads to access the ground with a four-wheeler to feed them, or to put fencing in, electric fencing, things of that nature. Both of those animals are going to do pretty well getting in there and actually taking care of some of the brush. Now, goats, nor pigs, like anything, would I say that I'm an expert on by any means? It's been 4 years that we've had the farm here, and I still take advantage of a lot of people that I consider to be experts and more senior to me. I'm actually going to the Pennsylvania Sustainable Agricultural Conference here in a few weeks because I need to learn a lot more. But yeah, in general, both of those animals are going to be able to get in there and actually do some of the brush clearing, and you'll see where you're at afterwards.
And then once you have them in, you recommend having fencing and other things to make sure that you kind of get them where they should be?
Right. Like portable electric fencing with an energizer and a battery is so valuable. Goats, you need more than you need for pigs. Early pigs, after you train them to it, you can keep them in with a single wire electric fence.
Are there any particular breeds that you would recommend raising?
All I can say is that what we've grown here is boar goats, and we got those as kids and then fed them up. And so boar goats are a meat goat. And pigs, we've raised pigs that came out of a confinement barn locally that were the modern hybrid breeds. And we've raised, which I've been more happy with, pigs from small farmers like us who are farrowing on pasture. And those have been Berkshires, they've been crossbreeds of Tamworth, Gloucester Old Spots, Duroc, Ossabaws. We've had all those. I personally, what I've settled on here and what I believe we're going to do on a go-forward basis is I want to work with feeder pigs that come from farms where they have the pigs outside. They've been outside for generations rather than a barn receiving medications, antibiotics, things of that nature. I think pigs that have been raised outside are more likely to thrive in a natural environment such as a river bottom like that, or out in my field, either one. They seem to be a little bit tougher to me.
Kind of a hardy heritage breed.
I think the source of where the pigs are coming from, where the piglets started their lives and what their parents were doing, how they were living, may be more important than the breed. actually, we were just at the farm show, and you know, there is a Pennsylvania Goat Producers Association or something like that that I put in my file because I'd like to learn more about raising goats. Also, there is a there's a farm close to Sunbury called Owens Farm, and they have a pastured pork day every year. I went there and a couple years ago and learned more about pastured pork from other producers. And there was a guy I met there, his name's John Hopkins, who has a farm near Bloomsburg called Forks Farm. And John so happens to be a forester as well as a farmer. So he has a really unique perspective in terms of anything having to do with timber and pigs and other species and how they come together.
And that kind of leads us into the second question, is that all these questions came in from Charles and relates to his land. And in this wooded area, he says that the timber is relatively low quality, with only a few nut and berry producers. The understory has a lot of undesirable invasive species. And I think we touched on this some, and it's that, should I therefore consider doing a fair amount of clearing and establish a silviculture pasture? But you say, though, that with these two particular animals, with pigs and goats, you don't see a deep need for that?
Well, I think you might end up getting there. Depending on the density of the animals you put in there, how much clearing they do, you may end up with a more clear understory with your trees above. As far as, you know, do you select cut certain trees? Beyond my area of expertise, what I know is I recommend you put some paths in there, get some electric fencing, get some pigs, get a number that you're comfortable with, and just do it. That's how you learn. And find some other people you can call. You know, if things don't seem right or you have questions, build a network. That's what I do. I guess I know no other way than bull ahead and do it. Don't think too much about it.
You are raising a lot of chickens here. Would you consider pasturing chickens in woodland after it's been cleared and do like pigs, then run goats and then run chickens through? Or would you need more clear open space to get the chickens in?
My concern with chickens in a low woodland area would be raccoons. And raccoons will tear them up unless you have a way to keep them in at night. So, you know, even in my fields here, I have to have broiler chickens in either electrified netting, or I need to have them in what we would call a Saladin type shelter. So Joel Saladin, Polyface, lots of people know about what Joel does and what that family does. And they have these square pasture broiler pens. And you know, my experience has been, if you really want to keep the raccoons out of them, you know, you put hardware cloth on, not just chicken wire, and then still expect that they're going to get some once in a while, and you may need to do some, how shall I say, raccoon control. So in a river bottom, you're going to have a lot of raccoons, you're going to have mink. I'm not saying you can't do it. It's just that if it's hens, you need to have a way to put them up at night and close the door, or have them enclosed in electrified netting, and you have to keep that fence hot. Or you need some sort of shelter. And I just envision a river bottom being a little bit more challenging in terms of terrain to be able to do those things. But if you can do that, sure, you could have chickens in there. If you could do that, that being protection from predators, particularly raccoons.
And that's one, if someone hasn't explored their site or is aware of these, you know, take something like a trail cam, make a small investment, put it out there.
If you have a river bottom, there's raccoons.
Do you have much of a problem with possum?
I have not here had a problem with a possum getting into any of my chickens. Raccoons to date have been my only real problem. There are possums around. I will tell you that possums are not tolerated, but possums, skunks, raccoons, mink, weasels, they all would like to get in and eat your chickens. And you got to do the best you can to play defense. And then when it happens and they get you, you go on, but you have to deal with it swiftly and harshly. I don't know how else to tell you, and be ready with, you know, whether you know a professional animal control person or, you know how to deal with it, but you have to deal with it, but try to keep them out. They were here before me, right? So I want them to be able to go down by my creek and catch crayfish and frogs and do all those things that they naturally can do, which is why I used to use chicken wire. Now I use hardware cloth, even though it's a little bit more expensive and a little bit more heavy, but it keeps raccoon paws out of my broiler shelters. And then maybe we both can live together. And if they want to go at night and, you know, visit my chickens and scratch at the pen, that's okay. That's fine.
So even if they can't actually get it like a whole chicken, just if they can get their paw in there and grab hold of it, they're going to do damage to your flock.
Yeah. So if you want to know brutally what happens, they grab the chicken, they pull them up to the wire, and they pull out one appendage at a time, one limb at a time. And that's what raccoons do. And raccoons are very brutal. Everybody, I think sometimes we have these visions of wildlife and they only take what they need. And that's completely false in most cases from what I've seen. If they can get into a flock of chickens and bite off a bunch of heads and leave the bodies there, they will. They like killing. They don't have to get the whole chicken out in order to kill it. A raccoon can fit its paw through the opening in a chicken wire fence and it will grab one and pull it to the wire. Since we've been here on our farm, I've had no losses from raccoons here, and my neighbors can't believe it. I know they all whisper and talk about me because I talk to some of them and they, in a hushed tone, say, haven't you lost any chickens to raccoons? And they get a smirk on their face. And I say, no, actually I haven't, but knock on wood, because it'll happen now, first night of the new year or something.
Well, may it not happen. I think, though, about, you know, raccoons and mammals and all these other things. They're the cute things that the pictures get taken of, or Disney movies include as the animal companion. We have some raccoons that come around to our house, and we're not raising any livestock at this point, but I think about some of the pictures that I've gotten, and you have this big furry raccoon that looks like it probably weighs about 15 pounds and kind of like that idyllic forest picture, and then you actually go to raise something and then have this happen. With the hardware cloth, are you covering the bottoms of your pens as well and letting the chickens feed through that?
No, we don't, because we want them to have access to the ground. Plus, you would have a hard time moving the pen because it would drag, you know, it would get caught up when you move the broiler shelter, because they get moved once a day, sometimes twice a day, depending on conditions. And so no, you can't cover the bottom. But what you do is it's difficult when you're on ground that has a lot of humps, holes, terrain variations, because we use a 10-foot by 12-foot shelter. And the reason we do that, you know, you want to get it as big as you can to give the chickens more room, but also so that practically, you don't have to, if you have to move a 6-foot by 6-foot shelter, there's only so much square footage in there, but it takes the same amount of energy, labor, time to move the pen. So you want to make it as big as you can and still have it be manageable. But then the other thing that happens is the longer your pen is, the bigger the dimension, the more likely that you have terrain variations that are going to cause a high spot where there's going to be a gap between the bottom board and the ground. And those spots are places where predators could either crawl completely in and really do damage, or where, you know, what a raccoon will do, I've put boards next to a pen to try to keep them out, and they'll come by and they'll pull those boards away and then reach in underneath and grab chickens by the leg is what they'll do. So you put boards there to fill up that gap as you move it. And that's why I think on a river bottom, it would be challenging with, you couldn't put a pen like that, most likely, because there's just naturally when ground floods and back and forth, tree roots, things like that, you're going to have a lot of variability. So you would need an alternate system to keep the predators out.
Now you have another type of fowl running around. Are those guinea fowl that I saw when I pulled in, or is that something else?
They are. I'm not sure those guineas contribute a lot to the farm here other than that they make some noise. They're like guard dogs. But yes, we do have guineas. We got them for tick control is why we got them. But what happened is they just love hanging out with the chickens, and they like the chicken feed, and they've become lazy. They don't bother. The chickens themselves range out much farther than the guineas, I think. The guineas just like to hang around and eat the chicken feed. So,
the things that we learn as we do this.
Yep, this is reality.
Then the last question from Charles is, what are your thoughts about temporary shelter for a few goats or hogs on adjacent high ground for 2 to 3 weeks of the year during times of flooding risk on the low-lying woodlot? What kind of space is required for a short time period? And what kind of shelter do you recommend based on versatility, convenience, and affordability?
Sure. So goats or hogs, first thing to consider is we all think they need shelter because we like to have shelter when we're outside. But the reality is if they come from tough stock, those hogs I was talking about hunting in South Carolina, they do not have any shelter other than what God provided to them, right? And the timber and things of that nature. When it floods down there, they move to an island, they move to a piece of high ground, and they lay out in the rain. They probably lay next to each other to get some community warmth, but they don't have any shelter. So first of all, you may not need anything. You may not need anything other than the natural timber and brush that is there. I provide shelter to my animals that are out in the pasture primarily because there's no windbreak, they're not out in the brush. But particularly, they have no sunshade. There's nowhere to go on a hot day. So my animals all have shelter. But whether you need it or not, I'm not convinced of that. But in terms of what can you do for portable, movable, we like everything to be portable and movable so we can get it around with a small tractor if we decide we don't like where it's at. I was building hoop shelters with cattle panels that I bought at Tractor Supply. It's a 3-foot by 10-foot welded wire cattle panel on a framework built of pressure treated lumber that I bought, you know, at the Home Depot next to the Tractor Supply. If you look in Mother Earth News, it's, you know, back probably a couple years ago, and there's other people who have done pictures and plans on the internet. If you start looking around, you can find a lot of creative shelters made from cattle panels, tarps, and wood, and fence staples to affix the cattle panel to the framework of wood that you've built. You can build some really nice shelters like that. We've gone through hurricanes with those shelters, but we tied them down. We took stakes and staked the T-posts, staked them down. But I also, this year, I went to a more permanent structure, a little bit more expensive, but I bought some Porta-Hut shelters. They are a galvanized steel hoop structure on skids that I can pull around the pasture. I have some 8-foot by 14-foot Porta-Huts, which are pretty easy to put together. And they should last for 20 years. And that would be a good option for hogs or goats as well.
Can any of the shelters that you suggested serve double duty to also house chickens, or would you provide separate shelters for your different animals?
The hoop shelters, you could put chickens in there. If you put them in when they're smaller, certain breeds of chicken will tend to go in them at night or in inclement weather. Your broiler chickens, especially the modern Cornish cross, is a ground rooster. They actually cannot fly up to a perch. So they would go in there and they would take shelter from the sun or from the rain without a doubt in a hoop shelter like that. A lot of other breeds that like to roost, you know, you could sort of figure out a way to provide perches for them in there, put some boards from side to side that they could sit up on. But we use some of those hoop shelters in the past for our turkeys. And the turkeys, even if the rain is pouring down, I guess they use it. You could say that in a way. They like to sit on top of it, even when the rain is pouring down, because they just want to be up on a high spot. That's a whole other story. But you get enough turkeys on the roof of a cattle panel shelter without enough reinforcement underneath, and they collapse it. You keep laughing, Scott.
Because it's these firsthand accounts that are honest about what happens, because that doesn't sound like that's something that a farmer told you could happen, but something that you experienced with your own turkeys.
Yeah, right. And that's where it comes back to some of these things. You just try things, you do it, and you always have to be prepared to go out, you know, in the middle of the night if need be, and give them some alternate arrangements or try to fix things up. That's what happens when you're doing, you know, mobile pasture-based or woodlot-based agriculture like this.
And that covers the questions that I had. Is there anything else that you have in mind from this conversation that you just want to address before we bring this to a close?
No, I think I've made you laugh enough and we've had fun with it. But they're great questions and they're real questions. So I guess what I'll say is it's really natural that we want to, and this is good because it's the pursuit of excellence is what I hear. We want to do everything right. We want to make sure that we've thought through everything. And you should try to figure out as many things as you can ahead of time, without a doubt. But a lot of it, it's going to vary with the conditions you have on your piece of property. You're going to run into different challenges than I have that I can't even tell you about. And unless you, again, my advice is you start small, get some animals, try it. Have a list of resources at hand, whether that's internet websites, books, but importantly, other farmers, people who have been there, people who have done it. And they don't have to have a whole lot more experience than you. If they have one more year than you, or you know, they've raised some more animals than you, they already can provide some useful advice. But you really have to, there's some campaign that went around that was commercialized that said, just do it. And I believe that.
If after listening to this, someone has more questions, they'd like to reach out to you, are you open to having listeners contact you with questions?
Sure, absolutely. People can reach me at our website, which is herringsgreengrassfarm.com, all one word, herringsgreengrassfarm.com. They could reach us on the website there. people can call me on my cell phone for that fact, 570-573-9255. That's fine as well.
And I will go ahead and include links and additional information in the show notes for people to find that. Thank you very much, Wayne.
Sure, thanks.
And that was Wayne Herring of Herring's Greengrass Farm. In addition to sharing his thoughts on these questions, after we wrapped the conversation, Wayne recommended a series of books for me to suggest to you if you're interested in small-scale livestock. All of these are from Joel Salatin, and you'll find them listed in the show notes, along with a link to Wayne's website, at thepermaculturepodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, the usual ways are email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, phone, 717-827-6266, which is also the fastest way to get in touch with me. And you can also join in the conversations by liking the show on Facebook at facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast, or follow along on Twitter where the podcast is at permaculturecst. Coming up next week is Natasha Alvarez to share her thoughts on the idea of permaculture as revolution. And after that will be the second piece with Adam Campbell, talking about permaculture and education. And that about draws this episode to a close. But before I end things, I'd like to ask you to do two things for me. One, if you know someone interested in permaculture, tell them about the show and share your favorite episode with them. Two, leave a review for the show on iTunes or on your favorite podcast site or blog. Letting people know that this resource is available to them will really make a huge difference. And I appreciate everyone who lends a hand. And that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other. And that little bit of legal, the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann is released under Creative Commons, Attribution, No Derivatives, Non-Commercial License. Feel free to share it with whoever you like. Just tell them where you got it from, and don't change or sell it.